Hello, everyone. Welcome to our little corner of cyberspace that we call Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guests today are a band of brothers who have been making music together since they were kids in their parents' garage. You probably started tuning in around 2002 when they dropped their double platinum disc, Wonder What's Next, which features smashes like The Red and Send the Pain Below, and they have not stopped rocking since. They're gearing up to release their new record, Neurotius, and that's an acronym, but I won't spoil the surprise. The disc is steeped in their passion for sci-fi, with references to Elon Musk, missions to Mars, and simulation theory. I promise to focus on music as much as The Matrix. I'm so happy to welcome Pete and Sam from Chevelle. You're about to release your ninth album, Neurotius, I believe I'm saying that right, an acronym which stands for Nothing is Real and This is a Simulation, which I have to say, after a year like 2020, I take a lot of comfort in that. How did you land on that for the title?
Yeah, you know, that's just how we felt, like you, in 2020. You know, we finished the album in March, and we flew home the day they shut down all the restaurants in Los Angeles area. So we were flying out March 18th and we landed at home. And then, you know, we had 13 tracks that were done, and you have to sum those up in a title. So we thought, this just feels insane, for one, like everyone else felt, you know, and what a better way to, it just didn't feel real. So we're like, maybe this is a simulation. Yeah. I was getting into a lot of, simulation theory and that whole topic, that wormhole down YouTube, you know, there's a lot of videos on that. So, yeah.
That's so funny. This was, at age 33, I watched The Matrix for the first time this summer, purely because of what you were just saying. Like, everything felt so weird. I was like, oh yeah. I started going down the whole simulation theory rabbit hole.
And fucking great movie, man. Yeah. I saw it in the theaters when I was, I don't even know what year that was, 99 or something like that.
It was like real prime Y2K era.
Yeah. It's great.
There's so much stuff that you can pull from too when you watch it. Like, one of my favorite things about that was the deja vu explanation, which is brilliant. You know, I'm sure everybody who's seen The Matrix remembers the deja vu. It's a glitch in The Matrix. So every time I get a deja vu, I'm just like,
God. You're thinking about that movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did you ever read the really interesting Chuck Klosterman essay that he has about simulation theory in, I forget which book of his, but it's really fascinating stuff.
No.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'd love to. Yeah. We'll look that up.
I mean, so much of this album, I mean, the mood, I know it was finished before COVID, but it really just seems to fit this era so much. I mean, your new single, Self-Destructor, the lines just, they don't care what science says. I mean, it just feels so relevant. And yet this was all written before that.
Well, yeah, but science denial has been going on for
a long history of that. That's true.
Yeah, these lyrics all stem from a conversation I had with someone, and I was just kind of dumbfounded and wondering where the world was headed. So that song just came out of me. It was, you know, from personal experience, and it was before COVID. So it is about the anti-vaxxers. And so it did kind of fit. It kind of fits now too. So I didn't, you know, we don't usually get into like hot topics like that. We're a little more tame, you know, as far as like, I mean, we don't always tell people what these songs are about, but this one is pretty obvious, and it's pretty like,
but yeah.
You know,
it does affect us.
Anytime you have someone who's, like Sam said, a science denier, for me, it's just a little gut punch, like we're headed in the wrong direction. So the song's aggressive and, you know, I hope people dig it, but, you know, it's a hot button issue right now.
It really is. In order to be an anti-vaxxer too, and I've done a little bit of research into this, why people are anti-vaxxers, and you have to literally ignore the truth. Right. At some point you have to say, okay, well, if I put these two things in front of me, they're in front of me. Right. But you have to deny that and say, no, just because I see them and can touch them and everybody agrees, that doesn't mean that it's there. And you're like, okay, well, I can't argue with you. I can't argue with that. So that's it.
I mean, on the flip side of all the science denying, you have a lot of space themes and interstellar travel on this album. I mean, I'm thinking of the Mars Simula with Elon Musk traveling to Mars. How did that come into the mix?
You know, I think it's just that whole like Ray Bradbury growing up reading his science fiction, and there's so many stories about Mars that stuck out. And then, you know, once I had a kid, those things start coming up and you start digging out, you know, old books and things like that. And that was a big influence on me when I was growing up. So it's just always been there, you know, the Mars concept, getting there, you know, it's just, which is completely fascinating. I mean, you know, we went to the moon and then it just kind of like stopped. Now we don't go back to the moon. I don't. So I'm fascinated. I'm kind of like waiting to see what we're going to do to get even further to Mars, because I'd love to see it happen. But I just also, when you start learning about the complications of space travel with the radiation problem of keeping people healthy and then mentally as well, that's why I called it Mars Simula, because for me, it's like you're getting off the Earth to, you know, maybe shit is crashing and burning here. So, you know, you need to go, you need to populate another planet, it's an interplanetary species, keep it going. But this riff just needed a heavy, just kind of like a fun, heavy topic for me. And it kind of fit. And I was just calling it Mars for a while. And then actually, when I was looking back at the lyrics when we were finishing the album, I was like, you know, this is more like, this is almost like a, you know, it's not, we're not there yet. So I'm going to tack on Simula here, because, you know, there are those videos where you can virtually travel on YouTube to Mars. But it's just a fun topic. It's not, you know, we're all just sitting here waiting to see what Elon's going to do, right? Isn't, you know?
Would you take a ride if he ends up having the sort of space tourist vehicle?
Oh, wow. Like up into the 150,000 miles up or whatever? Like, isn't that what they're talking about doing?
Yeah. Something like that.
No. No way. No, I'm going to keep my feet on the ground. We had this.
Agreed.
Sorry.
I want to add to Pete's thing. When I found out how many people were willing to sign up to go to Mars, that gave me anxiety. Yeah. Just knowing that there's people that were willing to do it.
There's a really fascinating mini documentary. Maybe it might have been a New York Times thing. It was like 10, 15 minutes long that just interviews, I think, five people. It might be called If I Die on Mars or something like that. Where it's people that it's like, yeah, I'm signing away. Like, I'm happy to do this and go do this. And I'd be fine if I never come back. It's so fascinating to hear all their reasons and everything. It's really interesting. Because on one hand, it's heroic, but on another hand, it's terrifying.
There was a great program. I think it was just called Mars on, I think, National Geographic in the past couple of years. I don't know if you saw that series.
Yeah.
I think it was about three seasons. But man, is that good. Check it out. Phenomenally done.
Yeah, I agree. And they should have called it If I Die Trying to Go to Mars, because that's much more likely. Are you willing to go to Mars? Yeah, I'll die on Mars. Are you willing to die before you get to Mars?
Yeah, that's a different question.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned those great, you know, 70s sci-fi novels and stuff, and that gets me to your album cover by the great Boris Vallejo, who did all sorts of incredible 70s novels, and then of course the posters for National Lampoon's Vacation and Knight Rider. How did you first approach him for this?
Well, I would love to say that, you know, Sam called him up and had a nice conversation, or I did, but we just went through the label and it's not very exciting. But I had this about a decade ago. I came across it was a massive kids book. It was like an oversized kids book, like 3 feet by 2, like 70s, maybe it was early 80s book in a thrift store. And it was selling for like 10 bucks or whatever. And I bought it, and I've had it in my collection of things that I like from the road. And it's awesome. You can open it up. It's like these, you could frame these posters, you know, in book form. If you were to cut them out and frame them, they look that good. So it was just this little score I had of his work, you know, from a children's book. So for the last, man, probably the last decade, I've been like, oh, I wonder if I would love to have some of Boris's work for a cover. I mean, it fit the time right now for us and in our album. So, hit him up, and he was into it, and we were super excited. Intense. And you should go check out his website, because it is it's rad. I mean, it's funny because he runs the gamut, doesn't he? He's got like, now he's doing a lot of like, you know, it's these sci-fi nudes that are so like, wow, they're rad. I mean, they're really killer to look at. Lots of dragons, lots of
women with tails.
lots of space travel.
Runs the gamut.
With naked people.
Yeah.
A lot of naked dudes too. So he's, you know, he's open to everything. Absolutely. So
yeah, rad dude. I saw that as well. In fact, one of the ones that we actually were looking at to use as a record cover was just, we sort of deemed it too much.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it was just a little too close with the creature that was on it. So, but we loved the way it worked out.
The visuals for all of this are so cool. I mean, of course, the video for Self-Destructor is like Men in Black with way better cars and vehicles. It looked, when did you put that together? Was that all filmed before COVID? I mean, it's like a mini movie. It's awesome.
That's a good question. It did turn into a little mini movie. Pete and I sat and brainstormed over that thing and just kind of came up with that. And then we gave it to our director and our production people, Rob Gibson, and they just sort of built it from there. It was weird to shoot it. We shot most of it outside. It was a small team, 6 people. And because you have, for insurance and everything, you have to wear masks, you have to check, you have to get COVID tests and all that stuff. It's difficult to work right now, to do anything. So, but we did it. We did it the way that they required us to do it. Everybody was good. But it was fun to shoot. It's probably the most fun we've ever had shooting a video, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks absolutely amazing. I mean, just the visuals for this are just so striking. It's so cool. And of course, the music, obviously. You worked again with Joe Baresi, who produced your last 4 albums, I believe, since 2011's No Bull. What is it about Joe that makes it such a fruitful collaboration? Like, what does he bring to the table for you when you're recording?
Well, right out of the gate, he's just there for the artist. So it's really difficult to give that up. You know, once you have that working relationship, you know, I mean, Sam and I will do demos and I'll just email him where we're at. And he gives us his notes and we, you know, either he's digging it or he's like, this song is complete and utter shit. You need to go back to the drawing board, which happens too, you know? So
he sent back 7 songs. He was like, I don't like these 7.
Yeah. So those are just kind of waiting. They're, you know,
to be adapted to be.
Yeah. I don't know where we're going to do this, but yeah, it's a demoralizing, it's a hard conversation to have. Cause you're like, wow. So nothing redeeming. But we'll see. But he's honest. So that helps. You don't want to dick around when you're trying to get something great done. So that's what you're always shooting for, is to beat your last project and beat the last song you send him. So it's just a good working relationship is really what it is. You know, we like him, you know?
Yeah. You'd be mad about it if he didn't get so much better music out of us. So it's like, you can never be mad about it. Cause it's like, oh, he was right. I wrote this much better of a song after this. I think after he sent those original 7 back, I think he wrote Mother Earth, right?
Mother Earth was probably the first one back. And then, yeah, others came from there.
And it was great because he called up Pete and he was like, dude, I'm sitting here, me and June. June's the engineer. And he's just like, we're sitting here, me and June. And we just listened to this 3 or 4 times in a row. We can't stop listening to it. This is what we've been waiting for. And it is so encouraging. It made you want to keep working, because then he ended his conversation with, now go write 7 more of these.
Well, Pete, I think there was an interview recently where you said that this was sort of the most difficult time that you've had writing material for an album. How do you push past that? Or is it just endurance, like sheer force of will? Or is it a case of just waiting until you feel inspired?
Yeah, it's part, you know, it's part not wanting to be bored. It's part inspiration. And it's part of being brainwashed over my career. Okay. Because we were brainwashed into, you can never sit idle, right? You always keep you on the road, you know, and which is good and bad. You know what I mean? Cause you love it. At the same time, you're like, you don't know which way is up half the time. So, but that's more in the beginning, but, it's just kind of like this, this machine that, you know, when you stick to it, you're happier. That's where I am. That's why I just start, you know? So it's not a huge, you know, secret behind it. It's just what we do, which is what makes 2020, you know, so awful for musicians. You know, you're just prevented from getting into groups, clusters of people, and sharing your music and your art. So I know that it's affected everyone, but you know, in the arts, it seems like it's really, it's just been like this, you know, this bulldozer that just like went through your career. So, it's been tough. Not going to say it was easy. It's still not, and we're not back yet either. So we're just waiting to see what's going to happen. Like everyone.
Have you been able to get together, the two of you in studios together? Has it mostly been over Zoom for all?
Yeah, we have a studio at Pete's house. So I go there, five times a week and work. It's just his family and my family. We have little kids. So we're kind of like in our own bubble. I mean, we are in our own bubble. So we're still able to work, but it's hard because I think the part that makes it hard to work is you write the music, you record the music, and then you play the music. And since you can't play the music, it's just, it doesn't ever feel like it's
finished.
You don't
get the feedback.
So you're just keep working. Yeah. And you keep working and you're just kind of like, when does this get to see the light of day? And who knows if it will, if you'll be able to play the songs. But I mean, right now it's like our management, our attorney, people like that say, just keep writing. And you just kind of going, I want to do the next thing. My pattern process has been this for so many years. You write,
you tour,
record.
Yeah. And
tour.
It's the full circle of that process. And right now we're just kind of like, it's like a glitch in the matrix. Again, going back to that, you're like, something's off here, you know?
Right. And I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying that it's almost like you're waiting to do it is all. And so without doing that, it's difficult to just keep writing. I mean, I know Prince did it. So we can do it. He kept writing and writing and writing, right? So he was always writing, but Pete's always writing too. So
are you ever superstitious at all when you write? Like, is there a place you like to do it or a time of day or an instrument you like to use?
No, not really. No. I mean, I started using a keyboard on this album a lot. So I wrote a couple, piano on the end of Self-Destructor. And I, you know, that was the first instrument I learned as a kid. We all had piano lessons, and that was, I think, probably a good thing. It kind of gave us 8 octaves of, you know, notes to sort of train your brain. So I'm actually getting back to my roots in the piano world and keyboard world. So you're going to hear a lot more of that on this new album as well.
Learning an instrument is difficult in that you don't understand the writing process of it. So when you're a kid, you're playing these, you know, crappy little songs that somebody developed that are easy because they're easy to play and easy to learn. And then you start learning classics, you know, Beethoven and things like that. But you're not really learning. Somebody's just teaching you the notes. You're not learning what it's useful for. I think that's, I'm sure there's people teaching that. I'm sure there's people that are great music teachers, piano teachers, teaching people to expand beyond that. But when we were kids, we weren't learning that. We were just learning this thing. And it was like, I do not want to sit and play How Much Is That Dog in the Window anymore.
Yeah, you hated playing piano, bro.
I hated it.
You needed to find your instrument there, which turns out you just like to bang on shit. So, I mean, you did it. You located your passion there. So, but man, I love piano, once I got a hold of a guitar, it was, you know, bye-bye piano for a minute. But like I said, I'll write on anything, you know? So, you know, didn't John Lennon say, you know, give me a tuba, I'll write you a song.
What kind of sound out of it?
It's like, you know, really, you just need to start, sit down with that and you'll end up somewhere. It might suck, but it might be great.
I mean, piano is such a cool thing to learn on, because I remember taking music theory classes in school and they would say, you know, we're not trying to train you to be a good pianist. We just want you to see visually what this all is, like how this all fits together. And then, you know, how the notes correspond to the page. And it's such a great, even if you want to write songs, even if they are, you know, guitar oriented. Yeah. I mean, being able to have a background in piano makes it, I think, so much easier too. That's a really good point. I mean, being sort of more, I guess, housebound these days, is there a feeling of almost like returning to your roots, like being back in the garage at your parents' house or something like that? Like, is there any sense of that with you?
Yeah, what do you think, Sam? Well, we have little kids, no, so I have a 6-year-old.
No.
And Sam has a 6-year-old and a 4 and a 2. Is that what it is? 6, 4, and 2. So Sam's he's in the thick of it right now. I'm coming out of like the real stressful baby part of it, and now it's really like 6-year-old is great. I mean, you're like he's doing Minecraft on his own, and he's like he does these train simulators.
That's awesome.
Really big into that, which is amazing. I don't understand it.
They
create these worlds with train tracks, and they can pick and choose and make all their own like freight trains. He's like, that's a passenger train. That's a blah, blah, blah. So yeah, but I mean, it's
that rules. Wow.
You start digging out your old toys, and then you see that amazing thing. He's playing with the same Hot Wheels that you played with at 6 years old. Great. But so I mean, I think Sam and I are trying to motivate each other while we're home, when you're not with the kids, when you're not doing the family stuff, to keep continuing on. And that is why we got a video done. That is why the album is being released. You know, it's for our mental health and moving forward. Even though we can't tour, we still have to move forward in some way. And we had to get back to our fans. I mean, it's been like 5 years.
Yeah, Pete's 100% right. And for me personally, the struggle is being home so much. You get so involved in the kids' lives, where before you wouldn't be quite as much. You'd have more of a, I don't know, you're just traveling so much. But now that I'm home so much, now I struggle to get away. So I'm just struggling with the work and family life.
That's why you go to a studio 2,000 miles away from your home.
That's right.
So that you focus 12 hours a day and you actually get something done. So it is tricky to work at home.
It is. And of course you like your kids and you want to be around them and all that, but you also have to work, you need to work. So that's a little bit of a struggle that I have never put up with. I
mean,
I've been traveling the world for 22 years. That's when we really started traveling. And it's weird not to. It's very strange not to.
What's filling that space for you with connecting with fans now that you can't tour?
I mean, it can't really be filled, I don't think. I mean, you're not going to do it through social media, that's for sure, because that's something you're doing anyway. I mean, there's no way that can fill that in between. And that's the hard thing, is that seeing somebody play a song live, I mean, as a fan of bands and things, there's just no replacing it whatsoever.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's no replacing the live show. I mean, we've only rehearsed with our new bass player twice, and then COVID hit, and then we haven't seen him. So, you know, we were talking about doing a live stream for the release, but in reality, Sam and I are in a bubble together, and we don't even see friends or family in person. And so even to get ready to play a show right now is a little difficult. We're going to figure out how to do it, you know, through testing and things like that. We're waiting for these home tests to arrive, and then we're going to get back on the horse, see if we can, you know, this year at least do a live stream if the live shows don't come back. So, you know, it's tough.
We're all encouraged that we're hoping the live shows come back starting in June, July. That's what we're all holding our breath.
This is kind of a strange question, but I've been finding over the last year, I've been listening to stuff I haven't listened to since I was in high school. Just like musical comfort food. Have you been feeling that too?
Absolutely, man. I've loved it. And movies too. Our web guy said the same thing. He's like, everything is about everything that makes you feel comfortable or remembering something positive. I've seen so many movies that I grew up with. And Pete and I spent yesterday, we were doing a couple of things together, and we were listening to Korn's album Issues. Went through that whole album twice. And just, I mean, it's a great record, still a great record.
And reminiscing a little bit.
Yeah, reminiscing a little bit about, and just the songs and all that. So yeah, definitely. That's true.
Yeah, I've been eating a lot of croissants lately for some reason. That's, you know, that's comforting. And I don't know maybe it was like when we were in Paris that one time, Sam. Remember that coffee shop? That great.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's what it
was. That Jean-Claude?
Jean-Luc.
Jean-Luc. That's it.
Old coffee commercial. There you go. See, those things pop up in your YouTube feed, and you're like, why am I watching what's that coffee?
I don't know. It's like
coffee creamer.
International coffee or something.
Yeah, you're like
that.
Oh, great 80s commercials. Oh, and now I'm going to watch this on YouTube. what is wrong with me?
Oh, they're totally in your mind, though. I mean, like, I'll have a phone in the other room and I'll think of something and then I'll go get my phone and there'll be an ad for whatever that is. Like, I fully believe that. I mean, it's the Matrix, guys. It all goes back to the Matrix.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, weren't you saying that, like, you came across a, like, a 1980s BMX bike
Brilliant.
Magazine and you're like, holy shit, this is what I saw when I was, like, 14.
Oh, yeah, I was 10.
10? Okay. Yeah, it was, like, neon, you know, pink bikes and shit, and like we're reminiscing over that. Yeah,
I think those magazines would have been like 86, something like that. And yeah, it was amazing because all those feelings. I have all this vintage early freestyle BMX stuff in my head, and it won't fall off the conveyor belt and let me put new stuff on. I can't get rid of it, so it's all there and it's printed in my brain. Die with it there. Like, I know all the part numbers or something. It's crazy stupid, but it was such a great time in my life that I focused on it so much that it just stuck. But it's good feeling to have something like that in your life that you can look back on, and it just brings all those memories and all that those ideas and what you were feeling at the time back. And I just went through that the other day. It was fascinating and fun.
I got to ask you, I wasn't going to, but the truck in the self-destructor video, that was a sick truck. Whose was that? Was that a rental? Was that one of yours? The green?
Yeah.
Was that really?
It was built by a place called the Roadster Shop that's down the street. It's like a town over from us. And we grew up with hot rods. Our dad was a sort of a greaser. And we have,
still is.
You know, it's still a greaser. Yeah.
Still greasy.
You know, we didn't go to sports events. He wasn't that type of guy. You know, he wasn't actually he was kind of hands off. We'll say he was hands on in the garage on his on his hot rod. So we would wander in. What's going on? What are you doing today? And he was like, listen up. I'm welding something. Don't look at the light. You know, there was no safety involved. Don't look at this blue light here. But it wasn't like, get out. He wasn't like saying, I don't want you there. It was like, it was just complete and utter danger for a child. So
no,
but anyway, so Sam and I, like, we're still into cars. It's just this residual thing from growing up around a dad like that. And we hopped into this truck one day that was in the showroom, and it's all original patina on the outside. So that's the original color. It sat and baked after it was used up. It baked in the Arizona sun, which is what they tell us. And, you know, they redid enough of it so that you could drive it and it starts up. It's fuel injected.
Everything.
And it's just a hoot because our 6-year-olds love it. You know, they want to go for a ride in a vintage car. To them, it's full on, you know, the hell is this thing? You know, it's actually kind of dangerous, I would say. You know, there's no airbags. It's you know,
but it has harnesses. It was built for autocross, so it's a full chassis. It's full everything. So it drives.
Yeah,
amazingly.
It's great. But your face is going into that metal steering wheel. If you 4 miles an hour and you hit a curb, you know. So, but
it has a modern steering column and stuff, so it's not a long steering column that will go through your chest. It only goes to the floor.
Your teeth are getting knocked out. Yeah,
if you're wearing the harnesses here, you should be fine. You should just snap your neck, just bang,
just your face.
Yeah, but
it's crazy fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's way too much power and it's dangerous, and that's why it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually has a roll bar in the back of it too, so it's not completely. You can't see it; it's hidden behind the seat. Yeah,
that's why it's fun.
Yeah, we took and the fuel tank is in the rear instead, because on those old trucks the fuel tank is on the inside.
We'll
of the
nod
cab.
The safety there, yeah.
So we took that out as well. You know, I mean, it's like a modern vehicle, but it just looks old and cool.
It's so hard to plan anything these days, but I mean, what's next for you? What can fans look forward to in addition to the album coming up soon?
Yeah, that's tough to say. Yeah, because Sam and I are always talking about touring, because that's the full circle thing here. So if it doesn't come back, I guess we'll open up a Domino's. What are you thinking, Sam? Papa John's Pizzeria? Or you want to start on, you know, your own sort of thing there?
Maybe.
We'll see.
Papa John's.
That's really going to catch on. Yeah.
We have this square pizza idea. Might do that. Yeah, it's a pastorelli pizza.
Not rectangle, but square.
No, I mean, we'll probably, square, yeah. You know, I'm getting interested in doing more of like the soundscape sort of things, almost like for movie soundtracks. So I've been dabbling in that. So if we have to take a little bit longer of a break from the rock world, I'm going to be continuing on in some capacity, which, you know, I'm going to do it anyway, but this would just, I'd probably shift a little bit more, you know, into that. It's just something that's different and exciting, you know? So, I don't know. I think, we'll see what happens, man. I don't know. Do you know where you're going to be, Sam? If touring doesn't come back this year, I mean, what are you going to be up to?
I mean, I have a whole other plan. I mean, that's something that a lot of people don't know about bands. You pretty much don't make any money whatsoever from record sales, or actually nothing. Mm-hmm. Pretty much anybody that's on a major label really doesn't make anything.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're selling like 30 million albums of 10 million albums of one album. But if you're selling like 2 million albums of each record, you're not making any money.
It's touring.
So the only way to make money. Yeah.
You have
touring.
To.
If you don't tour, there's nothing. I mean, and when I say nothing, I mean nothing. So, if touring went away for years, you got to do something. You have to work. I mean, we have to work. So, I've got a plan. I don't want to do it. I'd rather do what I'm doing. I like touring. I like writing. I like recording all that stuff. And that's what we want to do. But I mean, music's got to come back. It's got to. I mean, these are just the things you think about every day when your job isn't completely in limbo.
No, I have faith.
Yeah. What you're seeing right now is the active optimistic side of Chevelle right now. We're actively trying, like every day, it's like, be positive, you know, because it's such a weird, just a weird time, you know?
Yeah.
I'll take it to
what the normal, the 5 days out of seven is, if you want to hear it. It's fucking terrible.
He's like, I don't want to hear that.
You don't want to hear that.
But I mean, it's not going to come to that. I have absolutely all faith that things are, you know, getting a little better every day and come summer. I mean, I saw you had some dates in, I think, Michigan and a few other places in June, July. And
yeah, we do. Yeah, we're really hoping those happen. And I mean, we're encouraged. I mean, our agents talking about it, they're like, we're pretty sure those are going to happen. So I don't know how, I don't know what the system is, because as these festivals and things, insurance can't cover those things. Insurance can't cover a pandemic. That's crazy. No insurance company could do that. So, so how do you put on these shows without insurance? Well, the answer is you cannot. So until the insurance companies are agreeable, that's when the shows will start happening.
Well, my last question for you, and it's been so fascinating asking everybody this because the answers always really run the gamut. If you could snap your fingers and have everything go back to normal, whatever your definition of normal is, call it 2019, what would be the first thing that you would do? Obviously, you would go tour and go back on the road. But
I mean, after he took the pill?
Yeah, exactly. After you took the red pill.
Back into the matrix.
Or is it the blue pill?
You have just taken the red pill.
Is it the red pill? Okay.
I think.
Yeah. But what would be the very first thing you do? But people you hug, trips you go on, restaurants you go to, or whatever would be the very first thing you do?
I would fly my mother-in-law in from Australia.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, the first thing I'd do.
Whoa.
For sure. Yeah.
Or head out to Australia to visit her. Better beaches there.
Oh, that's true too. But I think realistically, I would have work, so I wouldn't be able to do that. So fly her in so that she could be with the kids and see them. And my wife could actually be with her mother for a little bit because she hasn't seen her in, you know, almost 2 years. So
yeah, you know what? I think I'd do something similar. I would probably just call up about 10 of my closest friends and family and I'd say, come on over. Or I would rent out a room and be like, we're gonna go party because I haven't seen any of you in person.
That's right.
So
I agree.
I think that's probably what it'd be. And you know, just unload and talk. Yeah. Hang out, feel normal, you know, drink beer, lots of beer, maybe some tequila,
and
get
some breath in my
number
face.
One, Sam?
Some number one, yeah. Some number one tequila.
Ron White's tequila.
Yeah, get some breath in my face and put my breath in someone else's face. Be close to somebody.
That is a solid answer. Pete Sam, thank you so much for your time today. It's been such a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.